Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. So yukta vairagya. So here we have two. Yukta meaning the connection or engagement, and vairagya meaning detachment. So yukta vairagya means that everything can be used in Krishna's service. Right? Yukta vairagya doesn't mean everything can be used. Does that make sense? So therefore, when we are performing the activity yukta vairagya, we should make sure that it is engaged or connected to Krishna. Otherwise, just to do anything and so on, so why are you doing that? Oh, yukta vairagya. That doesn't necessarily explain it. Right? Yukta vairagya means it explains the process of I am engaging something in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? So now, because it's being engaged, then, like before, it can be sakam or nishkam. Or it can be from the area of pravritti or nivritti. Does that make sense? Because generally we take yukta vairagya meaning that it's something of attachment. It can also be something of detachment. Does that make sense? What would be called detachment in this world? Because the point is what's connected to Krishna, that is actually the naishkarmya. And what's not connected to Krishna, then that's our own idea. Does that make sense? So, therefore, mundane detachment is also not something important for devotional service. So therefore, engaging the elements of detachment in Krishna's service, then that also becomes yukta vairagya. Therefore, the whole Varnashram system and all that is able to be connected to Krishna. Right? Because it's not, in this world, it's not automatically connected. In the spiritual world, it is. But here, you can connect it to him or not, depending upon your consciousness. Right? So then this yukta vairagya takes on the elements that whether it's your own desire, then therefore you're connecting it, or it's just something useful to connect in Krishna's service, right? Then that's there. Or whether it's from the area of attachment or from detachment, it doesn't matter. Right? Does that make sense?
How does acting properly in relationships with other living entities, how is that pleasing to Krishna?
How is it pleasing to Krishna? How is acting in relationship with other living entities pleasing to Krishna? Because all these living entities have come from Krishna and are Krishna's. So you have to act appropriately for what is their position and how they're dealing in respect to dealing with you. So therefore, if you have a dacoit, your relationship with the dacoit is to run in the opposite direction. You know what I'm saying? Like that. If they're chasing you, then you run, because that's just your relationship with the dacoit. You know what I'm saying? So the point is just what's appropriate means you have to deal properly. So there's no undue violence. Violence technically means what's not connected to Krishna. That's actual violence. Like that. So that means then something that creates physical harm, you know, then if it's not within the duty, then it is violence. Does that make sense? You know, or physical pain. Let us say someone is giving another person a massage for medicinal purposes. It might hurt. So seemingly that violence then is not violence, because it's according to the duty. Right? And if one's following, therefore, the authority of the Shastra, you know, for applying the medical science, then we see that there's no, you know, it's connected to Krishna. Right? We're maintaining our health for Krishna's service. Therefore, according to the particular medicinal system, we're applying that properly because it has its rules, its dharma also, its nature, because that science has come from God, so we're following that nicely. And then our motive for applying it and all those things, so we're using it, but it may hurt. You know what I'm saying? Or the doctor may operate, so he has to cut. But that doesn't mean that it's violence. Violence means when it's not sanctioned by Shastra. So then technically we see on the battlefield Kurukshetra, that's not violence. That's war. That's fighting. But it's not violence. Because it's the dharma of war. And they have a actual bona fide cause for war. Right? If they don't have a proper cause for war, you know, just there's a peaceful village doing nothing, people come in and violently, you know, start fighting and killing people, that's violence. Right? But if it's a bona fide situation, it's war, like that, and it's done according to religious principles, it's outside, it's only soldiers fighting, so therefore it's not violence. If they were fighting in the city, and therefore, you know, the city is being destroyed, innocent people are being killed, that's violence. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that we have to actually understand what's the real definition of things. In other words, it's connected to Krishna, then it's not, it doesn't carry these qualities. Does that make sense?
How does one make the indirect connection to Krishna more direct?
How does you make the indirect more direct? It means it has to be just more, that has to be more prominent in the consciousness. Does that make sense? In other words, there's two basic ways that you're dealing with it. One, how do you say it? Well, you could say three. Because you're going to have body, mind, and words. You're going to be, specifically, body means you're following the ritual. Whatever is the rule on the activity, you're following that according to Shastra. And that's your determination. It's not by accident you're following it. It's that you know it's there, therefore you're following it. You know, it's like after you brush your teeth, you rinse your mouth 12 times with water. That's Shastra. You're following that because of there. So therefore it regulates it. So it brings it closer. Like that. It's more observable, more direct. It's not actual direct, but it's more direct. It's coming closer. Like that. You know, then if someone doesn't know, it's just, okay, Shastra says you have to be clean, so therefore, you know, after things, dealing with things that are putting things in the mouth is washed, you know, so like that. So you're not dealing with numbers, but the principle of washing your mouth after eating or going to the bathroom, you know, or taking a bath or these kind of things, touching something impure, then the mouth is washed. But, you know, so it's based on the Shastra. It doesn't have so much technical detail. But, you know, so, but it's only that one. Or it may be just, I'm supposed to be clean, so whatever, how much I know about cleanliness, I'm clean. So therefore, the person knows that they're supposed to be clean, so whatever is their standard of cleanliness, they follow that. But they're still following the cleanliness, they're conscious that they're doing it because of its connection to Krishna. So even, it's getting less technical as we go, but it's still connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, or it's that I clean because I like things clean. You know, I don't see it that it's necessarily a social necessity or that there's some rule on it, there's some religious obligation to be clean. Just I like things clean. And I do feel everybody else should be clean. You know, how can they be dirty? But it's just I like it. But then since I like something, whatever I do it for Krishna. Therefore, I like cleaning, I clean for Krishna. You understand? So it's getting farther and farther away and more just our own interest. Right? It's being simple, but it's still being connected. That's the whole point. It's there's nothing that can't... Everything comes from Krishna, so it's already connected to Krishna. It's not a matter of you can't connect it to Krishna. It already is. It's just a matter of do you want to recognize it or not, or can you recognize it or not. That's the point. It's already connected to Krishna. It already is Krishna's. But you see it in a particular perspective that's not connected to Krishna. That's the problem. Krishna is just his material energy. Right? We put it into this brick pillar. You know what I'm saying? But it's still his energy. It's still his earth. Right? So that's the whole point. It's still his. So it's already connected to him. His potency is his, you know, coming from him. He pervades everything. So it's his residence. It's so many things. It's already his. We're thinking of that, oh, this is very nice, it's natural, this, or this is disgusting. Why don't they plaster it? You know, don't they have any taste? You know, like that. Or, you know, wow, this is nice, you know, nice bricks and all that. Handmade bricks, and others are like, the handmade bricks, nothing straight, this, that. Why can't they get proper bricks? Why in India they don't have all these stupid bricks? You know what I'm saying? So it means we put our perspectives onto it. But now, whether those perspectives will connect to Krishna, that's a whole other topic. That's the topic, though, that is of the discussion. Does that make sense? But it's already connected to him. So all we're doing is we are connected. It's not that because I've connected, it's become connected. That's the Buddhist concept. I was in the forest, the tree fell over, it made noise. If I'm not in the forest and the tree fell over, would it actually make noise? You know, that's what the Buddhists sit around and waste their time with. You know, the Christians, it's how many angels on the head of a pin. You know, how many can dance there? You know, it's like that. You know, so one thing they never come up with, what kind of dancing they're doing. You know, like that. Because that also could mean whether they need more space or not. You know, so, isn't it? You know, if they're doing, you know, ballroom dancing, that's one thing. If they're doing, you know, how you say, barn dancing, that's another. They need a little more space, you know, like that. If it's, you know, it just depends what they're doing. You know, like that. So they never consider that, right? You know, you'd think they'd be more, you know, deep in their contemplation, because it's like, how many people could be here? Well, it depends. Are they standing? Are they sitting? Are they laying down? You know, so if they want to know how many angels on the head of a pin, then they would have to decide, you know, what exactly they're doing, you know, like that. They're doing swing, you know, they need lots of space, you know, like that. So, yeah. Always interesting to note that what's being said, depending upon the particular, how you say, previous samskaras, whether they understand what I'm talking about or not. You know, but
right,
okay. Does that make any sense? Like that. So this is the whole idea, is we're becoming aware. So body means that we're going to use the rules and regulations. In other words, the vaidhi sadhana, right? That's going to engage the body. Like that. It, of course, you have to use intelligence to understand it, apply it, the mind has to accept it, but the prominent feature is the body. That's why most people, when they think of religion, they think of those rules that control the body. And that's religious. Then the other thing is, then we have the attitude in which we're doing the activity, right? Because there's activity, and then the attitude in which it's done. These two are the main, because so that's the mind. So the attitude that the mind has, then that's important. Right? So if the attitude is right, you know, that means the character is right, then the activity will naturally be of good quality. But that assures that it's of good quality, the activity, and whatever it is that you want to get from it, from the sakam or nishkam, is derived. Like that. But still, and because you're following Shastra, that's pious. You know, that's uplifting. The attitude's right, that makes it even better. Right? The best of the attitude is, it's you're doing it to please Krishna. Right? So then that gives you, you know, develops your love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. Frees you from material bondage. Now, to speed in that process of freeing us from material bondage, it doesn't quicken the process of developing prema, but it quickens the process of removing the obstacles that keep prema from happening. Right? Means material consciousness. Then the intelligence is used in the way of contemplation. Right? So that's where then all the technical elements of metaphysics come in. You know? The Gita, the three modes of nature, you know, these five levels of consciousness. All, I mean, basically what we're discussing in this, all these definitions. Much of that is the metaphysical. Some of it's not. You know, when it's metaphysical, everyone sits around and, you know, either understands or blinks their eyes, right? But as soon as we get to the physical, you know, the body, the varnashram, then that's immediately where all the... Because that we identify more as religion. But religion means the inherent nature of something, both physical, mentally or emotionally, and intellectually, right? When we're dealing with the mundane. Then we have the nature of the soul, or of the spiritual, nature of Godhead, nature of the spiritual realm. Right? Nature, does that make sense? So that is not understood as religion. But religion simply means the nature of something. So the body should be engaged in a certain way, therefore there's rules to do that, because that will then, the body has effect, because we identify it, has effect on the mind and intelligence. Right? So that's why there's only certain things you can do with the body. So people not knowing that then say, why should we be restricted? We can do whatever we want. And then when they get a bad result, they're already too covered to actually understand that it's coming from what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the parent is overly, you know, in other words, they're liberal with the child to the extent that they don't actually establish for them standards. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to liberally apply standards, but most liberals don't have a standard to apply it to. They're kind of like these unspoken things that are contradictory and don't necessarily have any describable form, or at least they can't describe them. You know, just be good, be nice. But what's good and nice changes from time to time, and sometimes it's foolish. Like that, how you say. You're trying to be nice. The man lost his wallet. You know, and then he sees another person with that same exact wallet. He thinks they stole his wallet. That person goes over to the person with the wallet, steals it from them and runs off. Right? Then having run off, they look at the wallet, figure out it's not theirs. So then they come running back because they've made a mistake, they want to give it back. The person that they've stole it from now thinks that they're coming to steal more things or to, you know, injure them or kill them because they've seen them, and so then they go running off and go to the police, and now the guy ends up in jail. Right? So it was just a, you know, very badly applied mistake. Right? So now if he was really intelligent, he would know, if I go back there, they may think this, so therefore, let me, you know, apply it in some other way. You know, either go to the authorities and say this is what happens and here's the wallet, this, that, blah, or go and, you know, they'll have some address, just go and put it in there, you know, deliver it to the house, or, you know, some way, or send it to another person and explain it, or call them on the phone, whatever it is. You can find some way that they would understand the situation and get their wallet back and it wouldn't have created any problems. You know what I'm saying? But just be good, you know, oh, I should go give this back now, it might not have its good application. You know what I'm saying? You know, be nice to the snarling dog. You know, it might bite your arm off. You know, so it's, so you have to, there has to be something that regulates it, because God has created things, so he knows actually the nature of something. Therefore, because the physical action will have consequences later that will affect both physically, emotionally, and intellectually, and spiritually. So it will affect all the levels of Atma, right, of the self. Therefore, each one can't be something that will get in the way of the other. Does that make sense? So that's why the balance is there. So Krishna conscious devotion is the only thing that's actually balanced. Because karma will be overbalanced and not giving enough attention to the soul and the intellect. Right? But emotion and the body, very nicely it takes care of. Gyan will take care of the intellect. It may not take care of the actual nature of the soul. It takes care of part of it, the eternal aspect, but not beyond that. But emotionally and physically, it won't be dealing with anything. Does that make sense? So the devotion, bhakti, then combines these, you know, the benefits of the physical, emotional, intellectual, and the devotional, right, the spiritual. All that's nicely balanced. So that's why then one hears from authorities based on that, then one, then one follows rules. So that's your religion, that's how all these different things come up. Does that make sense? So one has to know. So these later chapters, and that once they've described, you know, the activities that are be done, the attitude in which it's done, like that, then they'll get into the intellect behind it. So all these things can bring it closer. Does that make sense? So if you have the right attitude, then these emotions will come. Then you can see is that, you know, the relationships and all that, that's coming from Krishna, that emotion's coming from Krishna, but basically it'll be dependent upon the intelligence. The intelligence has to control the mind. So in other words, you follow the proper activities, try to cultivate the proper attitudes, and try to see through the eyes of Shastra how all these things are functioning. Right? Does that make the technicality of the metaphysics? So through these ways you can bring it closer. Does that make sense? Yeah. Loudly ask.
If you perceive an indirect connection in the household ashram, then what would be the impetus to remain in that position?
What would be the impetus to remain in that position? Your attachment to it. Knowledge is not enough to stop attachments, right? Every smoker knows smoking's bad for them. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But they don't stop, right? Everybody knows it's good to go to Mangalarti, right? You know what I'm saying? So these things are there. So an intellectual understanding's not enough. So therefore, just because you have an intellectual understanding doesn't mean it's given up. Having the intellectual understanding means now actually you can properly perform manana. Because manana means intellectual understanding with the actual skill, the proper knowledge and skill and habit to do it. So in other words, you've learned the skill, you've learned the knowledge, but you may not understand it, right? So you externally perform the skill. By performing it, you see what works, doesn't work, and then you start to try to understand the skill better, right? So you apply the knowledge in that way to get an understanding of application of the skill. Then, having performed the application means by that you develop good habit because you start to become expert at it and good at it. So then you can contemplate the various ways to perform the activity nicely. Right? Then you may understand how this fits into the spiritual process. Right? And so that's good. That will then make your contemplation even better. Right? So that means your application can be more refined. But now through that application, you know, that practice, then comes realization. Right? So until you get to realization, the knowledge is a step to get to realization. Right? But that knowledge will only get you to realization if the practice is going on. So if in household life you see the, you know, the technical connections and all that, and then understand that this isn't so important. But the point is it's only by, with that understanding it's not so important, dealing with it in its appropriate way, the proper way, then you'll get realization. So proper way means no one else knows that you think it's not important. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If someone can figure that out, you're not doing it right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that is probably, you could say, the most misunderstood point in application of all the technicalities of devotional service, of knowledge and the metaphysics into their practical life. Because we become, by habit of being in the material world, gyan means no action. And karma means no gyan. So I'm doing the activity as long as I'm attracted, and as soon as I have some knowledge or understanding in it, I stop doing the activity. Because that's what we've done since time immemorial. You know, I'm inspired as a karmi, I do the activity. As soon as I get knowledge, then I become a gyani, I stop doing the activity. Does that make sense? But the point is if you stop, you won't get realization. Therefore, the gyanis never come to that high platform of understanding, which is realization. They never actually get to... The impersonalists technically never get in experience how they get knowledge past paroksha, which is a level of pranamoy. Technically, consciousness may be in vijnanamoy, but they're not gaining knowledge from that platform. They're still only getting it from pranamoy. Energy, life around, oh, this guy does that, see how he's suffering, so material world's a place of suffering. I'm still getting it on the paroksha level. They never get to aparoksha or adhoksaja. They can't experience the Lord in everything and all that. And they may experience Brahman, but then that's just Brahman, it's a material energy, it's still someone else. You know what I'm saying? So, they're just experiencing material energy, which is, you know, Maya. You know, Parvati Devi, she is a person. So they're just getting the knowledge from there. It's not going beyond. Does that make sense? So that's the word, because one thinks, oh, they're higher. No, they're not. Only devotees can actually get to these higher stages as ways of actually learning. Others can perceive to some degree. You know, you can give example. But they don't learn from there. That's not how they gain the knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is all these things can be happening simultaneously and at different levels. You know what I'm saying? So you can have a Brahman, which means naturally situated in Dharma, which means Manamoy as an occupation. And he's performing his religious duties, but his whole purpose of it is Artha. You know what I'm saying? So it can be in different places. Or we see the Pandavas, you know, they're performing, he's situated in gyan and knowledge. So he's performing his duties to go down. So in other words, he's situated by occupation in vijnanamoy. But his activities are manamoy, and his consciousness or his purpose, you know, his attitude is pranamoy. Right? Does that make sense? So anything can go any direction. That's why we explain it from all these different directions. One, be situated in your duty, because that's what the field of your activities. Then get your attitude right. So, you know, you're forgiving, you have all these nice qualities that are there, so that you just relax, then you can see things properly. Then you have knowledge, right? So body, mind, and words. So then that's all done. Then you see that all that has to be in relationship with the Supreme. Then you bring in the soul, right? Therefore, perform your duties, right? That's the body, right? And and it means that it includes the attitude, right? Because the duty goes with the attitude. Then with knowledge, so now you've gotten body, mind, and words, right? Then doing that for Krishna, right? So then you bring in the devotional. Does that make sense? So we're discussing, all these things are discussing the same thing. But from different angles, so that we make sure that we go in and root something out, you know, exactly what's the problem. Is that okay? Something else? Follow me, Maharaj? No? Okay. The yoga ladder. Okay. Buddhi yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. So, all these things. You can call them a ladder because you're going up through it, but they're applied not necessarily as a ladder. It means you have karma yoga. You have then that's engaging the body, the senses, in the Lord's service. Jnana yoga, where you're engaging the intellect in the Lord's service. Dhyana yoga, where you're engaging the mind in meditation, not in emotions, right? The karma yoga will be the body and mind engaged. So the senses, because the senses include the mind, right? Because the sense only works when the mind is there. Sense gratification happens only because the mind is involved. No mind, no sense gratification. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the... Yeah. So those two will go together. Yeah. So here's dhyana, is the mind is being used in meditation, but the emotional element is not involved. Right? Does that make sense? So buddhi yoga means you're using, and then bhakti will be the body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So bhakti means it's devotion. So technically speaking, if you really want to be technical, bhakti starts at prema. Right? Even though there'll be ten descriptions of the levels of prema with bhava as the bud or the beginning, but technically devotion begins with prema. Because then there is no other consideration other than that love for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that means everything below that, then the technical considerations are there to make sure that they come to the proper standard. You know, so that they're not an obstacle to the unfolding of this pure, unalloyed devotion. Right? So then, in that, then the karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, then encompasses all the levels from the neophyte to the, how you say, the Uttamadhikari. The neophyte will be basically situated in karma yoga. The madhyama will be situated in jnana yoga. And the uttam will be situated in dhyana yoga. Like that. And the neophyte, depending upon who they are, there may be the other elements, you know, I mean, there may be the jnana yoga also included. Like that. It's just a matter of whether they're dealing with sakam or nishkam. Right? Because jnana yoga means naishkarmya. Right? But it already includes the last, meaning that when you're doing jnana, it means buddhi yoga means they're combined. So if we weren't using buddhi yoga, when one moves from karma yoga to jnana yoga, there would be no karma yoga. Right? But what happens is that the consciousness, the focus is on jnana yoga. But karma, the same activities are being performed. The same sadhana is there. The sadhana doesn't change. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that does that make sense? Here? Is that these three, buddhi yoga is the combination of these three. So when Krishna says, perform your duties, right, in knowledge, perform your duties, karma yoga. In knowledge, jnana yoga. Remembering me, jnana yoga. And doing it for me, bhakti yoga. That combination, that is buddhi yoga. That's what the Gita is explaining. Right? So buddhi yoga is used to get us situated in devotional service and out of the material world. Right? And then continuing into getting you into the spiritual world. Right? But when it gets to that point, then basically we don't call it buddhi yoga anymore. Generally we call it buddhi yoga up to the point of liberation. Right? Like that. Once one gets to that point of Brahma Bhuta, then generally that's called bhava bhakti. You know what I'm saying? It's still the same thing. Where the dhyana is the main element. The others are there, but generally we'd call it by this other terminology. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes, no? Any questions on this? Right? It's important, this yoga land. So it's not that when one's... there is a progression, but at the same time, it's not that they don't all go on at once. In other words, all four of them happen simultaneously. The latter is which one is prominent. Does that make sense? Because even in the spiritual world, they're using their body and senses, right, in the Lord's service. They're using their intelligence in the Lord's service, right? Their devotion is to the Lord. But we don't call it, you know, buddhi yoga, or it's not part of the yoga ladder. We just call it prema, prema bhakti. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, it's just like, you have food, right? But if there's a lot of it, you call it a meal. If there's a small amount of it, you call it snack, right? Like that. But it's the same thing. So the whole thing is the same thing. But because of the fullness of it, it's called, we just refer to it as prema, right? Or bhava bhakti, bhav sadhana, right? So then, specifically in the neophyte and the madhyama stages, that's more what we call it, buddhi yoga. Okay? Just for reference, yes.
In Nishkam Karma, when one's still attached to the activity, is that equivalent to
jnana
yoga?
That's jnana yoga. Because you're attached to the activity, not to the result of the activity. You understand? You have a conditioned nature, so therefore you're going to serve Krishna with that conditioned nature. So it's easier to engage your conditioned nature than to engage some other nature. So in other words, you do the activities that you like to do according to your conditioned nature. Right? So that's your jnana yoga. But the result, that's your naishkarmya. But you're doing it, how you say, the results are Krishna's. The neophyte tends to be result-oriented, that he's doing it, the results for himself. Does that make sense? So then only, then as he does that and becomes purified, then he starts to give up the desire for that result and does it just to please Krishna. Right? But that activity that he's performed, he's more comfortable performing that activity to Krishna. Does that make sense? Does the bottom edge have means the top's arise. Is the bottom the of the yogipata? Is that the is that not raw? Mm. Is that, oh, yours is both sides. Oh, you've ripped it off a bigger piece of plastic. Does that make sense? Yeah.
When one performs an activity, not that it's for Krishna, but there is no still like the emotional interaction between the devotee and the Lord, then can it be considered that that person is in Buddhist, is actually Buddhi yoga?
That's buddhi yoga, yeah. It means as long as you're here, until you're on the platform of bhava, then know it, you're in buddhi yoga. It's just a matter of whether you're using it fully or not. Point is the emotion hasn't developed, that's fine, as long as you're fixed in it and determined and know that this is what you should be doing, or it's what you want to do. Like that. By performing knowledge in that state for some time, then the next stage starts to come, right? It means, in other words, you've heard everything, so you're not very, and you know, your beginning practices are not very expert, and your knowledge is not very good, but with time it becomes. You know, you're skilled, you're able to do. By staying in that position for, you know, continuing in that position, naturally the next stage develops. Right? Just like if I continue hearing and continue practicing on the first level, I will get to the second level. Right? And by continuing on the second level, in that, you know, that proper, I will get to the third. Does that make sense? So if one is finding the service is stable and steady, one is not distracted, disturbed, you know, it's not sentimental, that's the only reason you're doing it, that itself is going to get you, you know, you're going to move forward very nicely. It's just a matter of keeping at it and knowing that the point is to develop your love for Krishna. Then that taste will come. You know what I'm saying? Then from that taste, then all the emotional elements start to develop. Right? Because from taste comes attachment. Right? Taste is, you know, desire, interest. Ooh, that looks interesting. Right? So taste comes attachment. right? And then from attachment, then comes activity, bhava. So there's a taste for the transcendental. You know, it means that personal interaction. There's an attachment for it, then there'll be the activity itself. Right? Does that make sense? But one must be able to distinguish these three. Some don't distinguish that within the realm of that natural attraction. They don't distinguish between these three levels. Right? And so because of that, they can't tell the difference. Right? They just take it as an interest or there's an attraction. But the point is having become freed from anartas, when it comes to nishta, when it's fixed, then we're dealing with, again, body, mind, and words, but on another level. Right? Because now it's fixed in the devotional process. So we're starting to deal with the transcendental. Does that make sense? Well, before that, the neophyte is not really aware of the transcendental. So therefore, body, mind, words are trying to engage there. But they're unsteady. So once it becomes steady, then you can talk about now dealing body, mind, and words on another platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that brings it to the stage of, you know, buddhi, I mean, Brahma-bhuta, right? Then and there, then it's a matter of there's an interest. One has an activity, one has service. There's an interest, but it has to become a need. And that need then, when that becomes very fixed, then that endeavor is made. Then that's what brings you then to prema.
When the emotion comes and goes, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not there. The experience, what I say is that is it like the sun is the first stage? And then
yeah, it's between the first and second, because we understand is that when we say nishta, we mean that they're fixed in the devotional practice, right? It doesn't mean, and it means that the mind is not specifically focused on material, right? You know, in other words, the attitude is good. But it may not always be absorbed in, you know, the transcendental. Does that make sense? But you're engaged properly in the service, you're not engaged in something else. Does that make sense? So, but with time, when that comes to the point of taste, ruchi, then we see that that starts to become more and more prominent. I mean, the point is, yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, so it just continues. Something was this side, or someone raised a hand that side? No? Okay. So is that clear on all this and nothing else on this? Because otherwise then, tomorrow we'll go into the Anvikshiki. Yes.
I just wonder, are the prema bhaktis still, they have an attachment to their particular service or activity?
Does a prema bhakta have an attachment to a particular service or activity? Basically, they are their service or activity. Here it's different, but there, because of their mentality, they have a particular form. You know what I'm saying? So that form then gives the duties. Right? So because of the attitude, therefore they have duties. Here, we're through duties, we're trying to awaken attitude. Like that. Does that make sense? That's the thing, we're using the reverse. You know, from the physical, then we do the attitude, then the intellectual, then we move on to the, like that, just then we're out of the material world. Right? But devotion is, it's yoga because each one has been connected to bhakti. So it's karma connected to bhakti. Jnana connected to bhakti. So bhakti is the constant element. And that just grows as your devotion grows. And as it grows, then these other elements also naturally unfold. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is, like you were saying before, is you have an understanding of something, but it doesn't mean that one has to leave that. And then the fun part is because you need to be doing that activity with that knowledge to get to realization. Once you get to realization, you don't need the activity anymore. Like that. But at the same time, is because you realize you have no need for it, you can be engaged in it or not. You know what I'm saying? So the neophyte then, let's say you were talking Grihastha Ashram, has desires, he has to be married. Because he wants the results of that family exchange and facility and whatever is his drive. As a Madhyama, then he understands there's nothing really here, though there's the natural habit to be in that situation. By that knowledge, then he is able to deal with it properly, and so therefore his effectiveness in the Grihastha Ashram and his experience is actually greater than the neophyte, though the neophyte is actually attached to it and wants it. He gets it because he doesn't want it. Right? But now when he comes to the Uttam platform, then one would think at that point, no, now you'd naturally leave because why you'd be there, but to him it doesn't matter. Because there's nothing to gain or lose from material interaction, because to him it's not material. He's only dealing with Krishna's energy. Therefore, because otherwise sometimes it comes, how do people like Pandavas or Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how does he have, you know, 10 children or 12 or whatever it was? You know, how do they do that? Because to them it doesn't matter. They have nothing to gain for it. We make that complaint. How can he do that? Because to us, that's important. It's a material desire. Therefore, if we're spiritual, we can't have that material. But they don't have any material desire. So whether they're a Grihastha or Sannyasa, it doesn't matter to them. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, we see as these great devotees, they come many times in their different forms. And sometimes it's a consistent form because that's the whole idea in their Prishnis. You can see that thread, you know. And other times they come as, one time they come as this and one time they come as that. The exact opposite. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter to them. You know, the Alwars. One comes as a king, right? One comes as a Shudra. Does that make sense? Like that. One, you know, a few of them, at least one comes as a lady. They just don't care. Just whatever is important for the pastime, they will come and perform those activities. Does that make sense? Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Jai Śrīla Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. So you understand all that? Sure. Very good. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Maharaj, by conscious practice, one can become an uttamadhikari, right?
Right. Means by conscious practice, you can be qualified to be invited to be an uttamadhikari. See, by your determination and practice, you can go from a neophyte to a Madhyama. But you have, but it's by invitation only that you become an Uttama. So when your attitude and service and everything is attractive, then you will be invited into the Bhava, how you say, the Bhava Bhakti Club.
Stage and Yama Yoga stage according to what is explained to you.
Jnana yoga means you're always absorbed in thinking of Krishna and his pastimes and everything. Jnana yoga, you're seeing the mechanics of the material world, the modes of nature and everything, how that's functioning. Right? In other words, karma yoga, you're seeing the physical form of the material world and its functioning. You know, so you're properly performing a skill. Jnana yoga means you're seeing the metaphysics behind it, how it's working. Right? Like karma, you see bricks. Jnana yoga, you see that it's Krishna's energies that are holding it up. Jnana yoga, you just see Krishna. You just absorb yourself in Krishna and his pastimes. You know, in other words, the jnana yoga, you're dealing with the element of sat, eternality. You know what I'm saying? Because the soul is Satchitananda, so we're dealing with that. So we're slowly pulling our way out. Because Ananda, we get used to Ananda being in the material world. So relationships are here, so we have to pull ourselves out of the material through this process of knowledge, situating yourself on the transcendental. Then only then can the Ananda or actual rasa come up. Right? It means you have to pull out of one into the other. So you do that through going through the Brahman stage. Does that make sense? Because Brahma-bhuta means you're on the Brahman platform. But you understand it's different from the impersonalist concept, because the impersonalists think Brahman is it. They know everything's Brahman. We know everything's Brahman, but they don't know where it comes from. We know Brahman is Krishna. It's his existence. Potency. Krishna exists. Everything exists because it's in Krishna. So we're appreciating Krishna on the Brahman platform, but we know it's Krishna. The impersonalists only know it's Brahman. So there's a difference between our personal understanding of Brahman realization and the impersonal concept of Brahman realization. Right? Then from there, then you see how Krishna is working in it and making it all happen. That's the Paramatma aspect. Like he's the one that sanctions and controls, and then, you know, seeing all that. So you see it's all Brahman, then how it's working in the modes and all that, that brings it to the Paramatma. Right? And that, but the idea is from there is then it's Krishna's doing all this, so then his pastimes, you know, with the resident, with his devotees, is much more interesting than his pastimes as Paramatma or as Brahman. Does that make sense? So naturally the devotee, because of understanding that developing love for Krishna is the goal, he won't get stuck in these intern stages. You know what I'm saying? So that's why if you always focus on the goal, then the action will be correct. You stop the focus, you stop the action. You stop focusing, develop love for Krishna, you get to the Brahman level, then you're just situated in Brahman. So you don't move forward. So you always have to keep that. That's why you're cultivating both. Always remembering Krishna, never forgetting him. Right? Does that make sense? So karma and jnana are how to always never forget Krishna. And the jnana, bhakti, that's always remember Krishna. Does that make sense?